Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find
one. Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stuff.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to another live episode of Wall Street Unspun. I'm Peter Schiff. I am the host of the show for the next hour. And I will be taking calls. We didn't take any last time. I will be taking calls, although I'll probably speak for a little bit before we do. The number to call is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. And I'm also, again, the author of the book Crash Proof, How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse. Sales of that book have been picking up. It has been the number one investment book, again. It's up on Amazon.com. It's been the number one book in investments for the last week. And, you know, it's even been as high as, I think, in the top 30 books on Amazon overall. And that's pretty good considering the book came out in February 2007. And so the book is selling strong. It's a great book. If you haven't read that book, pick it up. If you've got some friends that are still clueless about what's going on and why it happened, it's a great gift. Because the book really shows why what happened happened and why this new bailout plan will not work. I also got the first copies of my new book, the little book of bull moves and bear markets. That book, I think, will be available in about a week or two. And so it looks pretty good. I think it's, you know, it's certainly a lot smaller than Crash Proof. That's the style for the little book. And there's a lot of repetition, so it's not all new material, but we wrote it for a different audience, the Little Book audience. But there is definitely some new material there, that's not in Crash Proof or that's not on my website. I wish I would have known about this bailout, though, that you know, I'm going to talk about that in a minute. But I wish I'd have known about that because I certainly would have had a lot to write about this. In fact, when I wrote the book, I had thought that more bad things were coming. I just didn't think they were coming this soon. I thought it would have waited at least till after the election before they did something this stupid. But anyway, if you want to call, it's 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Also, if anybody saw, I did a new show over the weekend. I was on CNN Anderson Cooper. I was on it last Friday, and I guess they enjoyed my participation enough that they invited me back on the show the following Monday. So I did the show basically two days in a row, Friday and Monday, and each time I appeared on the top of the show in the first 10-minute segment. So that was pretty good. I mean, that's probably also part of the reason why the book sales are picking up. But I've also done a lot of international radio and TV. This morning I was on radio in Norway. I was on TV Tuesday night, I believe, in China. And in fact, the lady that interviewed me, she had read my book because it came out in Mandarin some time ago. And she informed me that my book is very popular in China, which was good to know. I've been doing a lot of media, a lot of radio and television in Europe, in Australia. And I think people around the world are starting to figure out what's up. But in any event, I don't have any immediate upcoming television appearances now. But again, look on the website for any upcoming or forthcoming media appearances. Meantime, if you want to watch these Anderson Cooper 360 episodes, I know they're already up on YouTube. And at some point, if they're not, they will be on the EuroPac website as well. Oh, while I'm talking about the website, one new feature that was recently added on our website is other voices. And I'm starting to run some commentary by other individuals. I mean, right now we run commentaries from me and from John Brown. His latest commentary, Too Little Too Late, is up on the website now. But I also added other voices, and there are, I think, three different commentaries under the other voices heading. And we will continue to present worthwhile commentaries that are submitted to us by unrelated or unaffiliated authors. Probably the only thing is I kind of want to make sure that I agree with their perspective. I'm not, you know, necessarily looking to put up contrary opinion. I'm not going to be posting articles by people who are saying that, you know, this bailout is a great idea and, you know, the government is great. So I'm not looking to have an alternative point of view. I'm simply looking for other points of view with which I concur, and I think their information is helpful and insightful and worthwhile reading. So that is on my website under Other Voices. Anyway, what the government has now done, I mean, so much has happened since the last time I spoke a week ago Wednesday. It's kind of unbelievable. And every time you think the government has done something so stupid and that they couldn't possibly do anything stupider, then there they go and outdo themselves. And it's amazing what's happened. But over the last week, and it was started on Friday, and basically it looked like the markets were going to collapse, that Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley were going to go out of business. Right. And in fact, Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs have now announced that they're going to become banks. And the reason they want to become banks is because they need depositors' money, because they've blown through all of their own money and they want to quickly get some depositors' money so they can blow through that, too. You know, it was interesting when Bank of America bought Merrill Lynch. They got the U.S. government to change the rules. Up until Merrill Lynch was bought by Bank of America, it was illegal for commercial banks that have FDIC insured accounts to use those accounts to fund investment banking activity, because obviously it's too risky and they didn't want to subject taxpayer, you know, guaranteed insured deposits to the risks of investment banking. Well, the government changed that, and that's the reason that Goldman and Merrill and Morgan can now become banks, because under the new government rules they can take all the depositor money that is insured by the FDIC and do whatever they want with it. You know, they can fund all their investment banking activity. And so that was a big change. And this is not something I think we should celebrate, because, again, now if they screw up and lose money, they don't even have to wait for a bailout. It's already guaranteed by the FDIC. I mean, this is a terrible thing. Nobody is talking about this. Nobody. But this is what made the whole thing possible. But, again, so what's happened is that the government, when they looked into the abyss and they saw the market melting down, I guess they decided they couldn't just watch. They had to do something, no matter how damaging what they're doing is going to be. And so now they've got a huge bailout. You know, the government, for a minute, they let Lehman Brothers fail. And they tried to pretend that, okay, we're going to let people fail. We're not going to bail out everybody. Well, now they're bailing out everybody. And also, what have they done? They've made it illegal to short about 800 stocks. You can't short them. And, you know, talk about shooting the messengers. Like, the market is really going down because of short selling. You know, I'm afraid that this is going to backfire, because short selling serves a vital purpose, many purposes, in price discovery, in helping to offset the risks of trading. People are able to hedge their risks and make them more likely to buy. But I think where you're really going to see a backfire is the next time the market really sells off, the one thing that's going to be absent is shorts buying back their positions. Because every time there's a big sell-off in the market, at the very bottom of every sell-off are the shorts, who are committed buyers who come into the carnage and cover their short positions by buying back their shares. And that usually marks a market bottom. But if you kept all the shorts out of the market and now the market starts to sell off, you don't have that buying coming in to buffet the decline. And so we can have much, much bigger declines now that we've scared the shorts out of the market. But the bigger news is what the government is doing with this bailout. Let me digress. The government has decided, okay, to insure all the money markets. Because what started to happen is some of these money market accounts that had invested in some of this bad paper were blowing up. In fact, when Lehman Brothers failed, it caused one money fund to break the buck, and their shares were trading for 97 cents. And this panicked the government so much that they've now decided to insure money market funds. Now, with what money? How can they insure $4 trillion in money market funds? Well, apparently they're pledging the foreign exchange reserves of the United States, which only amounts to about $50 billion. But I guess they figure the dollar is going to collapse anyway, so why bother to have any reserves at all? But look at the moral hazard here. All of a sudden, it's now safer to put your money in a money market than in a bank, because in the FDIC, the insurance only goes up to $100,000. But if you buy a money market now, the insurance is unlimited. In addition, they're not differentiating between how much risk the money market is taking. You know, we had a lot of clients at Euro Pacific Capital that specifically said, I don't want to be in your regular money market fund. I want to be in a treasury-only money market fund. Now, when you do that, right, you only have treasuries, so you take less risk, but the yield is lower. But now the government has transformed every single money market out there into the equivalent of a treasury-only fund. So now, what's the point of taking the lower yield of a treasury-only fund? And so my point is now money markets can be as risky as possible. They can do, because the only competition is which money market fund pays the highest yield. I mean, before the government did this, if you saw a money market fund with a high yield, you might be concerned about how much risk they were taking. Now it doesn't matter. So what is this perverse incentive going to do? It's going to cause money markets to take a lot more risk than they were taking in the past, because now the only thing they're competing on is yield. They're no longer competing on safety. It's all yield, which forces the money markets into riskier and riskier assets. And this is an example of moral hazard, of unintended consequences, and it's the exact reason why this new government bailout plan is going to make the situation worse. And what is the new plan? What is the government going to do? The government is going to buy up all these mortgages that are on everybody's books. And they're initially telling Congress it's going to be $700 billion. Well, that's just the opening. I mean, it's going to be a lot more than that. My guess is we're looking at $2 to $3 trillion. And it's not just mortgages or residential mortgages. They're going to be buying up commercial mortgages. They're going to be buying up, you know, debt backed by credit cards, student loans, auto loans. They're going to be buying up, I think eventually they're going to start to buy up empty houses. They might start buying up stocks. You know, buying up AIG might have been just the beginning. The government might decide to stabilize the stock market by spending money to buy stocks, to prop up the price of stocks. You know, there's no end to what they're going to do, because the government refuses to allow the free market to function, because they don't want Americans to have to deal with the reality of the situation that we're in. They don't want Americans to have to deal with lower asset prices and a lower standard of living. So the government wants to pretend that they can solve these problems by creating more inflation. And that is not going to work. Inflation never works. Inflation creation is how we got into this mess. Government meddling in the economy is how we got into this mess. And additional meddling is not going to get us out. It's amazing, no matter how many times Paulson and Bernanke have lied, and they've lied plenty, and no matter how many things they've gotten wrong, because they've got it all wrong, it's amazing that these guys can still come up to Capitol Hill and still speak, and these guys are treated with such respect. And the politicians are ready to, you know, to line up behind them as they lead the parade to financial ruin. You know, if any of these politicians thinks, you know, that inflation is a good solution to economic problems, we got to get some of these politicians and ship them over to Zimbabwe, so they can talk to the people of Zimbabwe and ask the people in Zimbabwe how well inflation is working out for them, so they can actually see firsthand what we are going to be experiencing, you know, and what they are doing right now. This is my absolute worst nightmare come true. You know, if you go back and reread Crash Proof, when I was writing there about all the things that the foolish things that the government would do to try to prevent the collapse from happening, right? And that was a real danger, not the economic collapse. And I knew the economy was going to collapse. I'm the only person who did. That's why the subtitle of the book, Crash Proof, was How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse. I knew the economy was going to collapse. But what I was afraid of more than the collapse was what the government would do to prevent the collapse. Because this is the real danger. The disease is bad, but it's not fatal. But the cure is. The cure is. And that's why it is so, so important that our clients always remain focused on the big picture of what we're doing and do not get bogged down with the minutia of daily trading values. And just to show you how crazy this stuff is, I mentioned on this show that my account is basically 50% gold stocks. I'm way overweighted in gold stocks. Do you realize that gold stocks, as measured by the gold XAU or the HUI, H-U-I, in less than 2 weeks, the gold stock index is now up by 40%. 40% in 2 weeks. That means people that panicked a couple of weeks ago because their gold stocks were going down, people that panicked and sold them, they would have to spend 40% more money less than 2 weeks later to buy those stocks back. Now, how foolish would you feel if you sold out down there? There are some of the stocks that I own myself that were trading at $1 a share a week and a half ago that are trading for $3 and $4 a share now. Literally triple to quadruple what people were accepting less than 2 weeks ago for the identical shares, and no news has come out. None. You know, there are even individual stocks that a lot of our clients own. There was one in particular that made a 52-week high the other day. It was a food company in Hong Kong. And I noticed that it was up 13% to make a 52-week high, but it was up 25% in 2 days. You know, these stocks are very volatile. Now, of course, the dollar has lost a lot of ground since the last time we've spoken. The dollar has probably dropped about 5 or 6%. The dollar index was above 80, and now the dollar index is back down to, like, pulled up here, is it 76 and change or 77? Let me see where it is. It's coming up here in a second. 76.88. It was above 80. You know, the euro was all the way down at 146. It got as high as 148 in the last couple of days. It's pulled back up to about 147. But the Australian dollar was like at 78 cents. I mean, it moved up back to 83 or 84. So what's happened in the last week or two is obviously the value of Euro-Pacific capital accounts has increased substantially. I mean, some clients have seen their accounts move up 10% or 20% in the span of a couple of weeks. Now, a lot of these accounts are still down, right? If accounts were down 30% and then you go up 10% or 20%, you're still nowhere near where you were. But my point is this volatility is incredible. And if people were nervous and they sold out their portfolios a week or two ago, they're looking at much, much higher prices now if they want to get back in. And so what do? And if somebody did panic and sell out their portfolios and they have dollars now, look at where they are. Look at the risks that they're taking. Because this bailout plan, this $700 billion, soon to be $2 to $3 trillion bailout plan, what do you think that's going to do to the value of the dollar? It's got to crush it, right? Everybody is missing the point. They're all talking about the taxpayer. How do we protect the taxpayer? The taxpayer is not under assault here because nobody is talking about raising taxes to pay for this bailout. Nobody. In fact, both McCain and Obama are talking about tax cuts. All right. So it's not the taxpayers who are going to foot the bill, but there's a huge bill that's going to have to get paid. And if it's not the taxpayers, how is it going to be paid? Well, it's going to be paid by wage earners, and it's going to be paid by savers and investors, because the value of our money is going to collapse. They are going to print the money to buy up all these assets. And even if the government is trying to con us into believing that they're going to make money on this deal, that somehow politicians are going to take over this gigantic hedge fund, this gigantic sovereign wealth fund, and they're somehow going to turn a profit, you know, the guys that screwed up Iraq, that can't even deliver the mail, they're going to run this gigantic thing at a profit, that'll be the day. They're going to lose a fortune. But whatever happens in the long run, they got to buy the mortgages today. Even if they have value, they still got to buy them, right? They still have to come up with the money. And if they're not going to raise taxes, and if they're not going to slash government spending, they're not going to slash Social Security and Medicare or military spending, which they're obviously not going to do, where's the money going to come from? They're going to print it, and they're going to print it and print it and print it, and the dollar is going to collapse. Therefore, you can't be in dollars. Therefore, if somebody sold these foreign stocks, they're in a very, very risky position right now. They can either turn around and buy their stocks back for 10 to 20% more money than what they sold them for just a week or two ago. You know, what are they going to do? That's the reason we want to stand pat. You know, and I'm looking at this gold stock index. I think the chart looks so incredible. I think it's a massive head and shoulders bottom. I think we can be up almost at new highs for the year in the gold stocks, you know, just in a matter of a few weeks or a couple of months. I mean, highs for the year, which would be, I mean, basically more than a doubling of the stocks. And the dollar, I think if we pass this plan as is, the dollar can come under real pressure, because the world is going to figure this out. So again, the media's got it wrong. It's not the taxpayer. It's the people with dollars in their brokerage account. It's the people with dollars in their bank account. It's the people who are collecting wages, working for wages, and being paid dollars. They're going to suffer, and they're not going to suffer in the future. They're going to suffer right now. And of course, you know, as I said, this is just the beginning. The bailouts are going to get bigger and bigger and bigger because they're not going to work, right? They're not addressing the underlying problems with our economy. The reason that we're in, that the economy is in so much trouble, which is because we're borrowing and spending too much money, because we're not producing, we're not manufacturing, and we're relying on consumption. We're relying on borrowed money to consume, and the more money we borrow, the more money we can't pay back, and the worse our, the fundamentals of our economy get. And we're not dealing with the problem of the funny money. We don't have real money. We have this paper money. And the money is kind of like the blood of an economy. And if the blood is poisoned, if the blood is no good, the body dies. And our body, we got all this funny money that's flowing through the body of the economy. We don't have sound money. And these are the root causes of these problems, government intervention in the market. And none of this is changing. We're just doing it worse. And it's amazing that every time the politicians try to fix a problem, they create a bigger problem. And then they try to fix that one, and they create a bigger problem. And all the while, they don't realize that they're the cause of all the problems they're trying to cure. Right? That's how insane it is. And that actually is insanity, right? You do the same thing over and over again, and you expect a different result. All the government thinks is, the last time we intervened, we didn't do it big enough. We didn't do, you know, the stimulus was okay. We just didn't, it wasn't big enough. We need even more government. And so they keep making one colossal mistake after another, and they are going to destroy, absolutely destroy the value of our money. And I'm afraid there's no turning back. It's like I'm watching these hearings, and it's like I'm looking at somebody standing on the top of the Empire State Building, and he's going to jump, and there's nothing I can do to talk him off that ledge. And, of course, once we jump, and I think passing this bill is the equivalent of jumping. Once you jump, there's no turning back. There's no turning back. You're going to hit that pavement. And that's why, again, that's why it's so, so important that people not be in U.S. assets, period. Just keep your eye on what's really happening and forget about what your statements are saying. Forget about the short-term volatility. Don't worry. Don't worry if you buy something and it goes down, because what you're getting rid of, the dollar, is going to collapse, and I don't see any way around it. And, you know, my macroeconomic calls have been very, very accurate. I haven't missed any of them. I've gotten them all right for years. And, you know, if anything, I'm even more confident now than I was 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, because I have the confidence of knowing how right I've been on all the other stuff. And it's amazing how the people who have been so wrong, so constantly wrong, who have never gotten it right, these are still the ones that are in the public eye that everybody looks up to. I mean, one of these congressmen, you know, talked about to Bernanke today or Paulson. He said, "You're the superstar. You know more about economics than anybody else in the country. We're looking to you for solutions." These guys are clueless. These guys know nothing about economics. They're incompetent. They're fools. They don't know the first thing about what they're doing. You know, all these guys that they think are so smart, all these investment banks, they ran all their companies into the ground. And, you know, the irony of it is, you know, when the government puts this giant fund together, who are they going to get to manage it? These same morons on Wall Street that bankrupted their companies. You know, and of course, what's going to happen now that Goldman Sachs is going to become a bank? Every time another one of these FDIC-insured banks goes bust, Goldman Sachs' buddies over in the Treasury are going to direct those deposits over to Goldman Bank, where Goldman can then use those deposits to fund its investment banking activity, probably with just as good results as they've had in the past. You know, this is the government and Wall Street teaming up to ruin this country. Whether they're doing it deliberately, which I doubt, but they're going to end up doing it anyway. And maybe there's good intentions here. I don't know. But whatever they are, you know what they say about the road to hell? Well, we are laying down an awful lot of asphalt, and we are going to get there. But what I want to try to do is make sure that as few of the people who are listening to me on this show are going along for that ride. And if you don't want to be in that, you don't want to be there, you've got to act, and you've got to act as fast as you can, and stop being fearful about what you're buying, and be fearful of what you're holding on to, U.S. dollars. That's what you have to be afraid of. That's what you have to protect yourself against, because I think the bottom will drop out of the dollar one day soon. Maybe it's not tomorrow, maybe not next week. I don't know when, but it's coming. It's coming, because the world is not going to finance this. There's no way we're going to be able to con the rest of the world to loan us the type of money that they would have to. And again, none of the money we're ever going to pay it back. We might be able to sell the congressmen that we need this plan, but I don't think we can get the Chinese and the Japanese and the Saudis really on board, that they have to do this for their own good. So for your own good, you got to act, and act while you can, and act before this gets any worse, right? You look at what's happening with the polls now. As I said, Barack Obama is surging in the polls now. That Sarah Palin bounce is wearing off. And, you know, as the economy gets worse and worse, the election looks to be more and more a shoe-in for Obama. Believe me, once he gets in, look out. You know, especially that we do this bailout. Congress approves this bailout for Wall Street. How are they going to turn down the bailout for Main Street? It's coming. Wait till the government buys up all these mortgages. You think they're going to foreclose? Not on your life. What we're probably going to have in the next year is the government's going to pass a moratorium. The government's going to say, let's put no foreclosures. And the minute they do that, no one's going to make their mortgage payments, right? The minute foreclosure isn't an issue, why make your mortgage payment? What's the point, right? I mean, you can't get kicked out of your house. You might as well live there rent-free. That's, again, the moral hazard that we have. And, in fact, it's funny. Just after the government buys up all this mortgage paper that they're trying to tell us they're going to make a profit on, then they'll take actions that deliberately undermine its value. In fact, I'm convinced one of the reasons that private enterprise doesn't want to buy this paper is because they're afraid of the government taking actions in the future to further diminish its value, like banning foreclosures. And here you got this guy, you know, Warren Buffett out there, you know, of course, he's buying into Goldman Sachs, contingent on this bailout. But again, Warren Buffett is thinking, yeah, the government's going to make money buying these things. Well, Warren Buffett's got a lot of money. If Warren Buffett thinks there's a lot of value in these mortgages, why doesn't Warren Buffett just buy the mortgages, right? He's got the money. Why does he want the government to buy the mortgages? If there's value there, let him buy them. The reality is the government's going to overpay for these mortgages. That's why they're buying them. You know, if they were going to pay a fair price, you know, people wouldn't sell them. People are going to sell them because the government's going to pay more than they're worth. Now, there are some people that are thinking, well, no, it's just because of this mark-to-market accounting. You know, I don't buy that. I mean, first of all, how can we not have mark-to-market? If we're going to allow these institutions to carry these assets on their books at cost, right, well, that's a farce. We know they're not worth what cost. We know they're not worth par because we know a lot of these mortgages are going to be in a default. Now, maybe the mark-to-market accounting rules are a little too strict. Maybe they're forcing firms to mark these assets too low, and that should be looked into. But obviously, they have to be marked down. Maybe there's a more efficient way of doing it. But to pretend that they haven't lost any value at all is an even bigger disaster, you know, because obviously they have. I mean, obviously, if you loan somebody $400,000 to buy a house, and when you loaned them the money, the house was worth $400,000, that asset might have been worth $400,000. But if the house is now only worth $200,000, to pretend that the mortgage is still worth $400,000, you know, it doesn't make any sense because what's the odds that it's actually going to be paid off now, right? So, but there's probably a way, a computer model to try to determine what these things are worth in some way that might be more accurate than the mark-to-market. But that's something that they can look into. But we can't simply suspend mark-to-market like a lot of people are asking for and carry these books, these assets on the books of financial institutions as if nothing had happened, because that's even more irresponsible. But anyway, I know I want to quickly take some calls because I didn't take any calls last time, and I know there's some calls on hold. So let me go to the phones. Let's go to Earl in Kentucky. Are you there, Earl? All right, no Earl. Is Fan Ying there from New York? Fan Yin?
Yes, this is he.
Hi, this is Peter Schiff.
Hello. I have some friends that have accounts in Merrill Lynch, and they are panicking, and they want to move their money out of Merrill Lynch, and I suggest them Euro Pacific Capital. And they have some questions about, particularly, is Euro Pacific Capital just like Merrill Lynch in the way that it's leveraged? It's got
any leverage, but I mean Merrill Lynch is now owned by Bank of America, but we don't have any leverage at all. You know, we're not leveraged up. But when you have an account with Euro Pacific Capital, your account is at Pershing, and I know Pershing has, I'm sure, much leverage than Bank of America. But yeah, I mean, I think people should transfer their accounts to us more so because of the investment advice that we can give, and we can help people make better investments than your typical financial consultant over at Merrill Lynch. But I don't think Merrill Lynch is going to fail. I mean, I don't think Bank of America is going to fail. It's clear that the U.S. government is not going to let any of these big institutions fail. We can see that. So none of them are going to fail. What's going to fail instead is the value of the dollar. And so the government wants to say, don't worry. When you go to the ATM machine and you put your card in, money's going to come out. When you have your money in a money market mutual fund, don't worry, you can't lose any money. They can guarantee that, right? But what they're assuring is that you don't lose any money, but when you go to get your money, it's not going to have much value. And that's what I'm concerned about. I'm not concerned about quantity of dollars. I'm concerned about quality of those dollars, what we can buy with them. And I don't think we're going to be able to buy very much in the future. And that's why I think it's so important that people get rid of them now. People take their savings and their investment money and invest it abroad. Buy foreign stocks and bonds, buy precious metals, buy commodities, get out of dollars while you can, because the time to do that is running out.
They don't trust Merrill Lynch, and they want out. They don't care about whether it's solvent or not, or it's going to fail.
Well, have them call up a broker and ACAT those accounts over to Euro Pacific.
And if every U.S. financial institution were to go under, how would Euro Pacific handle those, like, counterparties and all that?
Well, we don't really have counterparties. We're not involved in these leveraged transactions. I mean, if Pershing were to go out of business, obviously that would be a problem. It doesn't mean that our clients are going to lose money, but it would certainly create problems for our firm to function if we couldn't work with our clearing firm. But we're not involved in derivative transactions and, counterparties, except on individual trades. Obviously, we can put in trades on one given day, and if we're trading and our counterparty goes bankrupt, then they might not honor the trades that we've done, but that would just affect, the business that we had just done. And, maybe we put orders on behalf of customers to buy or sell a certain stock, and we do it through a firm that ends up going bankrupt. They might not honor the contract.
Okay.
But as I said, I don't think the firms are going bankrupt anymore. The government is drawing a line in the sand. They're not letting anybody go bankrupt anymore. They tried that with Lehman Brothers, and they didn't like what happened. And that's why they came up with this new plan to bail out everybody.
Well, in any case, I just want it's just that these are questions that they have, and at least I can let them know about it. At least I want to make sure they feel comfortable with it, because they want out of Merrill Lynch.
Well, let them, what they need to do is make calls directly, call up 800-727-7922, talk to a broker, and ask those type of, boring questions off the air.
Okay, all right, I'll have them.
They're all there, all of them.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Hi, Earl. Fan Ying, thanks for the call. Let me go back to Earl from Kentucky. Are you there?
Peter, I heard a claim on public television yesterday which was presented as an absolute fact, which I would like your reaction to if you indeed agree that it is a true fact that they are claiming. The fact that they're claiming is that in relationship to the GDP, the debt of the United States is lower than the debt of Japan and the European countries.
Yeah, I mean, those are true facts, okay? They're not, it's not wrong. But again, those facts exclude all of our unfunded liabilities. And if you included the unfunded liabilities, then that's not the case. The debt is much larger. And also, we're measuring our debt against a GDP that's 72% consumption. If we pulled out all the consumption and measured our debt as a percentage of the wealth-producing component of our GDP, then that's higher than Japan and the other countries. And the other thing that's important, distinction between Japan and the United States, Japan's government has a lot of debt, but the Japanese people have a lot of savings, so that almost all of the Japanese government debt is owed to Japanese citizens, almost all of it. There's hardly any Japanese bonds held by foreigners. So the Japanese can afford it. They owe it to themselves. In contrast, we owe it to the world. Better than half of our government debt that's held by the public is held by foreigners. And of all the new debt, the majority of all the new money the government borrows, it's borrowing from abroad. So Japan has a lot of debt, but their country can afford it. America has a lot of debt, and we can't afford it. So those are different ways to try to rationalize it, as if we can actually handle this debt. We can't. Debt is destroying this country, especially since so much of it has gone to finance consumption.
Well, I mean, in Japan and in Europe, don't they also have a lot of unfunded liabilities?
They do. Everybody does. But I think we've got more. I think we've made more promises. Everybody's got unfunded liabilities, but we've got tremendous. We've got over 50 trillion. And our GDP is all, and our GDP is all fluff too. Even the legitimate part of the GDP is all fluffed up. With phony statistics. So these are people, again, they always try to rationalize and explain away why the situation is okay. They're trying to make the case that the fundamentals of our economy are sound. That's impossible. I mean, how can we need this massive bailout? You have all these politicians, Bernanke and saying and Paulson, that if we don't pass this plan, it's going to be Armageddon. It's going to be the next Great Depression. Well, if we're really teetering on the verge of the next Great Depression, how can our economy, the fundamentals of our economy, be sound? It doesn't even make sense. If it's as bad as they say they are, the fundamentals can't be sound. And that's true. The reason we're in this mess is because the fundamentals of the economy are miserable. It's a mess. And, of course, people say, well, you know, we need to do this or there's going to be a really bad recession. There's going to be a really bad recession even if we don't do it. I agree. I mean, I'm not saying that if we did nothing, everything would be great. It's going to be horrible. There is going to be a major collapse if we do nothing. Of that, they're correct. But it's going to be worse if we do something. See, they're trying to get us to believe that there's a major disaster coming and the government can save us from it. The government can never save you from a disaster. They can't do anything. All they can do is print money. All they can do is make the disaster worse. They can change its form or its nature. They can postpone it a little bit, but they can't stop it. I would rather have the collapse now and put my faith in the free market than the government. You know, that's what they don't understand. They think the government can actually save us. They can't save us from these losses. The losses have already taken place. We blew the money when we spent it, when we built all these houses, when we remodeled all these houses, when we bought all these iPods and cell phones and plasma TVs, and when we were buying all the granite for our countertops and all the leather chairs for our media rooms. That's when we blew the money. That's when we lost it all. The government can't turn back the clock. All they can do is paper it over and make the problem bigger.
Investment guru Ken Fisher, I don't know if you're familiar, he made the claim one time that debt is very good. The more you have, the more an economy can go in, you can borrow, the better, more beneficial it is to the economy. And I thought it was
that's utter nonsense. I mean, no, borrowing money to produce things is okay. If you can borrow money at 8%, and you can invest it in a piece of equipment that has where the investment has a return, internal rate of return above that hurdle rate, yes, you know, investment debt makes sense. Borrowing money to produce makes sense. That's how economies grow. But in order to have that money, you need savings. And that's what funds the growth. But borrowing to consume is like a cancer. That's what destroys an economy. And that's what we've been doing. We've been destroying our money. We've been using up our scarce savings to spend. And the government has been creating liquidity out of thin air, printing money, and we've properly spent it. So that's how we've destroyed our economy. Ken Fisher is completely wrong on that.
Is Buffett's investment of $5 billion in Goldman Sachs bullish for that stock of Goldman Sachs?
Well, Goldman Sachs is going down. Remember, Warren Buffett bought preferred stock with a 10% coupon. Okay, if you buy the common stock, you're not buying what Warren Buffett bought. Okay, Warren Buffett's getting, it's effective. He made a $5 billion investment based on his 10% coupon. Goldman Sachs has to pay Warren Buffett $500 million a year in interest. Now, after they finish paying Warren Buffett $500 million a year, there's not going to be much money left over for everybody else. So I would sell Goldman Sachs, even though they're going to become a bank. They're not going to be anywhere near as profitable as they were. The stock is a lousy investment. Now, if you could buy it on the same terms as Buffett, that might be a different situation because they also threw in $5 billion warrants. So he got a sweetheart deal because he knows with this bailout bill coming in that they're not going to go out of business. The government won't let them. But it's still not going to make money, not for anybody else. Warren Buffett might make some money, but you know what? He's not even going to make any money because the 10% yield is in U.S. dollars, and he's going to get wiped out through inflation unless Buffett is hedging it hedging the currency somehow, which he might be doing.
I'm glad you told me that because when I heard today Warren Buffett's buying Goldman Sachs, I said, well, maybe if he's doing it, I should be doing it too.
No, if Warren, no, don't do it. You're not buying what he bought. Anyway, thanks for the call.
Thank you so much.
Let me pick Jim up in Idaho. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, Peter. You know, I really want to thank you. 4 weeks ago, I converted my total IRAs at Wachovia and my company's 401k over to Europac, and I'm really excited and sleeping a lot.
You timed it pretty good.
Yeah. I'm going to be meeting with your folks at the beginning of October in L.A.
Uh-huh.
Peter, I would really appreciate if you start looking at post-collapse issues. the government's shown that they the rule of law doesn't apply to them when they went in and took over AIG. And I'm wondering what's going to happen to all these deferred IRAs when they're cash-strapped. And I have three questions for you, so if you bear with me. One is the IRAs. They could nationalize those as well and say it's for the better of the country with that vast pool of money out there. The second question I have is more for Euro-Pacific in terms of a post-collapse book that you might want to write. And that, what's to stop the government from stopping you and I cold in our tracks by putting on foreign exchange restrictions so that
There's nothing to stop the government from doing any of that. In fact, in this most recent bill, one of the things that they're asking for is that they suspend judicial review. Paulson is saying, we want to pass a bill that nobody can review. We don't want any court challenges to what we're doing, which seems completely unconstitutional. I mean, we're supposed to have checks and balances. How can one government pass a law and one branch pass a law and say the other branch can't look at it? I mean, it doesn't even – how can this be? Look, we've completely destroyed any rule of law. These guys are just making this thing up as they go along. They're grabbing all this power. Nobody is stopping them. They are going to keep doing – worse and worse things. They're going to keep infringing on our liberties and our freedom because they think it's their job to prevent these bad things from happening, yet they're causing them all. It's like, you know, this is like something out of the Twilight Zone episode it would be so crazy and bizarre you wouldn't even believe it if it wasn't true. But these guys are going to destroy this country.
I don't argue that point. And I understand that they can do anything they want. They make the rules, they break the rules, they make new rules, whatever they want to do. But if you can anticipate what they're doing, let's take, for example, an IRA. Well, would it be better to pay the damn 10% penalty now and take, you know, to pay the taxes now and convert it to something else?
I don't know. I always prefer to pay taxes later than to pay taxes sooner. So I would say, but definitely make sure your IRA is invested in non-dollar assets.
Right. And I do.
The money invested, you know, because most people's IRAs are going to get wiped out because they're not going to be invested properly. But, yeah, I do think at some point they might make it illegal to move money out of the country, what we're doing. And I am pretty confident that sometime in the next 5 years, what I am doing will not be legal. And believe me, by the time they say you can't do it anymore, you're going to wish you'd done it if you hadn't already done it, because they're going to be doing it because the dollar's in free fall and everybody on your block is going to be trying to get their money out of the dollar. And that's when the government's going to put a stop to it.
Right. So you think
that's why you got to act early.
Do you think they'll grandfather it then? In other words, if you've already owned those stocks, they're not going to make
They're not going to let you put more money abroad. But, you know, it's a bigger stretch to say, okay, you can't get more money abroad than to force you to repatriate what you already own. See, one of the ways they might do this is they might put a foreign exchange tax of 50%, 100%, 200%. So if you want to buy euros, and let's say it takes $3 to buy a euro, they might say, okay, we're going to put a tax. If you want to buy 1 euro, you got to pay $10 to buy that euro. So they make the transaction too onerous so that you won't enter into it. But the key is to try to get as much of your wealth out of the dollar now while it's legal, while you can do it. And as I said, don't worry about, you know, what seat you have in the lifeboat or if there's water splashing in your face or if it's a bumpy ride. The important thing is that you get in that boat before the boat that we're on sinks.
Well, you know, I had a friend of mine warn me about this in 2001 when I started my business. So all payments that I got from clients I converted to cash and then started buying gold bullion for the last 6 years.
Yeah. Anyway, let me hop. I know I got a bunch of calls on hold, so I want to try to get to. Let's take no more calls because I know I'm going to run out of callers. Anyway, thanks for the call. Next up is Peter from Florida. Is Peter there? Oh, Peter dropped out. Jeff from Indiana? Jeff, are you there?
This is Justin.
Yeah. All right, go ahead.
I was wondering if you could explain a little bit further what really is going on with the rest of the world right now, because I know there are some banking crises going on in England and some other countries. And
You got two things happening. First, you had property bubbles in many other countries, not just the United States, and those bubbles are deflating, and there's some bad mortgages and bad loans there as well. But, of course, more importantly, lending institutions all around the world loaded up on our bad mortgages, right? Because we didn't have any savings. We had to finance all these mortgages in large part by borrowing from abroad. So we infected banks and lending institutions all around the world with this toxic paper. And so this is creating some problems as these assets go bad. You know, that's one of the reasons that this new bailout plan doesn't just bail out domestic holders of this debt, but it's made to bail out foreign holders of this debt as well.
Right, and I saw an article today that said the Federal Reserve was injecting money into foreign banks or something like that, and I just don't understand really what, you know, all this money going on all over the world is.
You see the words injecting money, just think creating inflation, because that's really what they're doing. Anytime you see the words liquidity, just substitute the word inflation. Because it's all a nice way, it's all a euphemism for inflation. Stimulus, expansion, all these words, they all mean one thing, they mean inflation. And it means the value of the dollar is going to go down, and so you don't want to own it.
Right, and you don't believe the story where they say that other countries are faring worsely with this crisis?
No, I don't for one second. You know, not for one second. You know,
okay.
And a lot of it is because of the numbers. See, they say, look, our GDP is still growing, whereas other countries, you know, the GDP is not growing. That's because the government lies about just the numbers. The numbers are nonsense. We're doing horribly. It's just that the government, you know, gives us the bad numbers. It's like, you know, the government, it's like having, you know, your children grade their own report cards, and they come home and they have straight A's, and they say, look, I'm doing better than everybody else in the class. Well, maybe not, but, you know, you're the ones that are grading your own report cards. You know, if they had an honest report card prepared by the teacher, they might not be beating it. They might be at the bottom of the class.
Well, when is the rest of the world going to figure this out?
That's the you know, $10, $20 trillion question. They're going to figure it out eventually. You know, and when they do figure it out, if you're still in dollars, you're broke. I want to make sure when they figure it out, I don't own U.S. dollars. That's why I say you got to be early, and you can't worry about the fluctuations in your account. Because if you're trying to be cute, if you're trying to play it safe and you don't want any volatility, one day you're going to wake up broke. You're going to wake up with a bunch of dollars that don't buy anything.
Hmm.
All right, well, thanks for the call.
Thanks for the...
Let me go to... who's left now? Actually, I might have dropped a couple. David in Florida?
Hey, how you doing? Love the show.
Thank you.
I'm looking for your comment about something. You spoke briefly a minute ago about this rush to get this bailout done. We got to get it done now. We got to get it done now. And it made me think about a story that I read in Bloomberg News earlier this year, because there's a lawyer here in Jacksonville who's gotten hundreds of foreclosure cases dismissed or postponed because the people that held the mortgage, the investor, showed up in court and couldn't prove they owned the mortgage. And according to the Bloomberg News story from February of this year, I think it was the 22nd or 23rd, the investors that bought these CDOs, these mortgage-backed securities from the investment banks, they didn't get the right to the mortgage contract along with it. The subprime lenders, they made money on the transaction and they sold them off. The investment bankers sliced, diced, packaged, and sold them to investors. And then the investors are supposed to get the stream of income. It goes into default. They try to foreclose. They go into court, and judges across the country are saying, well, prove you have a mortgage. And they don't have the paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read about some of these stories. And, again, that's part of the problem with valuing these assets and why private sector doesn't want to buy them, is because, you know, because of issues like that. And, of course, again, as I said earlier, people are afraid that the government will pass foreclosure moratoriums, mandatory principal reductions. I mean, it seems like being a creditor, being a mortgage holder, seems like a very dangerous thing to be in for all sorts of reasons.
So is it possible that one of the motivations is to be able to pay off these investors before the banks that sold them get sued?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, there's a lot of, look,
we're talking
these guys in government. It's basically panic. The elections are coming up in 6 weeks. The market is collapsing, and everybody wants to try to put a Band-Aid on this gaping wound so that they can get reelected. That's all they care about. Nobody wants to deliver the bad news. No one wants to tell Americans that we're broke, that, you know, our houses are have to go down in value, that we have to consume less, that we have to save more. No one wants to say that. You know, it's crazy. You know, he Bernanke, again, they're saying on the stand in these hearings that they want to do this to preserve home equity so that people can keep spending. Well, how do you spend your home equity? You're not supposed to be able to spend your home equity. That's the value of your home. But, you know, meaning people can keep borrowing money against their home and spending it? That's why what we want to do. And what about cheap homes. I mean, doesn't that help spending? If I want to buy a home right now and home prices collapse and I can buy the home for a lot less money, doesn't that free up? If I can get a much smaller mortgage, doesn't that mean I have more money to spend on other things? Why is maintaining high home prices a national priority? You know, this is the same nonsense that people did, Ron Paul mentioned it today on television. A lot of people don't know this, but during the Great Depression, one of the things that the government tried to do was maintain food prices. You see, food prices were falling, and the government thought that was a bad idea. So we were destroying crops. We were plowing under crops. We were slaughtering and drowning livestock to artificially keep the price of food high. What kind of crazy people would do that? In economic hard times where people, you know, are supposedly hungry, why would we destroy food? Isn't cheap food a good thing, especially during an economic downturn when jobs are scarce and things are? Wouldn't it be a better thing if we can eat cheaper? This is the same nonsense. We need lower home prices. We don't need to maintain bubble home prices. But the politicians never learn from their mistakes. They simply repeat them, and they repeat them in a bigger way, and they cost us even more money.
Yeah, it sounds like that the politicians, for whatever reason, at the behest of the Fed or whoever, is determined to keep people in this country borrowing money. They can't invest in something from their savings because they punish you if you save money and they reward you if you borrow money. You have to keep the banks in business by borrowing money. They'd go out of business if we could do things with our own wealth.
Yeah, and of course, you know, one of the things that Paulson says they want to do is they want to preserve this economy so Americans can keep borrowing money to buy cars and buy things. Well, wait a minute.
Crazy.
How about if we just let prices go down so that Americans don't have to borrow money to buy things? I mean, why do we have to preserve the borrowing? Why? To help the bankers out? And, you know, of course,
exactly.
The whole thing is designed to help the lenders, the fat cats that are lending us all this money. But you know what? They're going to get burned, too. When you get into bed with the government, right, you're going to get bit. And what's going to happen is the lenders are going to find out that the government is not their friend because they're going to get paid back, but they're going to get paid back worthless money. And in the end, it's the creditors that are going to end up getting wiped out.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you. Next call up is Patty from Texas.
Hi, Peter. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call. Well, we read your book over the weekend. We spoke with one of your brokers last night, and we pulled out of the market today. Got a question for you and then one concern. We're in the planning stages of building a house. Do you think it's smart to continue or just...
Well, I wouldn't build a house now because there's so many houses that have already been built that are going to be selling for well below what it's going to cost you to construct this one. So I would rather continue to rent and wait to buy an already built house for a fraction of what it would have cost you, especially if you can take the money that you would have spent on building the house, send it into us, let us invest it abroad, because then I think you'll be able to sell that investment and buy yourself a much, much nicer house.
Okay. And one concern, you know, we seem to have always bought high and sold low. You know, it sounds like when you talk about gold that it's moved up so high right now. Is it still a good time to buy gold?
I don't think gold is high. You know, I think it's still low. I think gold is going to go up to, you know, $5,000 an ounce, maybe more. So I don't think it's high. You know, it's higher than it was, but it's still cheap relative to how much money we've created and relative to how much more money we're going to be creating over the next few years.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Thanks. So how did you happen to hear about me?
You know, we were watching Glenn Beck, and he just mentioned your book. My husband caught the name. We bought it right away. We both read it this weekend. We spoke with one of your brokers, Todd Robertson, and it was so helpful. And so, you know, we're a little nervous, but we're really thinking about sending our money to Europac.
Well, good. I'm glad these Glenn Beck appearances are working. You know, that one week I think I was on his show three times. And, you know, Glenn Beck's a great guy. I mean, it's amazing how much he actually gets. I mean, he always makes a big deal about saying how little he is and how little he knows. You know, maybe that's why he can think clearly. All these guys, these financial guys, they know so much. They spend so much time in college and in with their faces in books and listening to all this government propaganda that they can't see the truth. But he comes, he looks at it from a different perspective, and it's a lot easier to see what's going on. That's one of the reasons that I can see it. You know, I don't have my experience, you know, working, you know, in mainstream. I mean, I was there at Lehman for a couple of years, but my whole career I've kind of been out on my own. I haven't been engulfed in this. I haven't been brainwashed and indoctrinated by the establishment. And when you can look at something, you know, with a clear focus, it's so much easier to see. And I
know. Well, it was
perspective.
I was listening to your book, and I, you know, you wrote something in the book. It's like it's happening today. You know, it's just happening today, and it's really quite painful for the average American to see what's happening.
Well, the average American still hasn't figured out how bad this is going to be. I mean, people are still going about their business. And I walk around the streets of New York, and everything looks the way it's always looked. I mean, so many people are completely clueless about what is going to be happening to this country and what is going to be happening to their lives. And they don't even understand how important it is that they take action to protect themselves, because they have no idea that this threat even exists. People are just so complacent. They think that the money in their pocket is always going to have value. That's not going to be the case. You know, we've only been on this fiat money system since 1971. So what is that, 35 years? For 200 years before that, we were on a gold standard. And that's where the stability was. That's where this country became rich and powerful. We've bankrupted ourselves under this fiat money system, and I think it's coming to an end. And this is what's going to kill it. This new plan, this is the straw that's going to break the camel's back. This is the end of it. I don't think the dollar is going to survive what ultimately is going to happen over the next 4 or 5 years. Certainly not in any form that's recognizable.
It's a scary time, but we're so grateful that we happened to turn on Glenn Beck that night. And, you know, sometimes we've watched him, we thought, man, he's so gloom and doom. And but, you know, when we heard it that day, it struck a nerve. But everything in your book is, you know, spot on. And just one sentence on chat and page 6, it's like, oh, my God, that just happened 2 days ago. It's quite...
And, you know, there's a lot more stuff, because the book only has so much stuff. If you go to my website at europac.net and you read my economic commentaries, read everything I wrote since that book came out, and you'd be amazed. I mean, there's so much more stuff. I mean, I could write a book just with my commentaries. But there's all kinds of good stuff on there, and a lot of the stuff that I wrote in the commentaries has now taken place. And a lot of things that people thought, oh, no, that can never happen. How's that going to happen? And all of a sudden it happens. And people are yet, I am starting to get more credibility on some of these shows, but still there's a lot of people, you know, that are still following these Pied Pipers, over the edge of a cliff, that Paulson and Bernanke, when these guys, you know, have their fingerprints all over this disaster, they helped mold it, and they've constantly been wrong. I mean, for crying out loud, Paulson just a couple of weeks ago went to Congress and said, if you put a bazooka in my pocket, I'll never have to use it. And then he fires it the first chance he has. And the guy can still go up there and have credibility.
Well, my thing is I really wonder what
I used it
with the money.
Huh?
I wonder what they're really going to use that money for. That's my conspiracy theory. It's even
Look, they're going to do what they say they're going to do and then some. And it's not going to be just $700 billion, I said. It'll be $2 or $3 trillion before the whole thing is over. This is just the tip of the iceberg. They're going to want more and more and more and more. And nobody in Washington has the guts to stand up to them, because they're all afraid of not getting reelected. And this is a shame. It's a shame that these politicians only care about one thing, their own reelection, and they couldn't give a darn about the country that they're supposedly representing.
Right. Well, we're really grateful that you wrote this book and that maybe we're still a little bit ahead of the curve. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling. Welcome aboard as clients, and tell your friends. Get more people to read the book. The more people that understand the truth, the better.
Yeah, we will.
They're not investors. They still need to read the book so that they understand.
Yeah, great. Thanks again.
All right, thanks for calling. Anyway, we're coming in the last couple of minutes. Yeah, you know, this is very important. Action is important. Simply knowing what's going to happen is going to be meaningless if you do nothing about it. You know, you've got to protect yourself. You've got to prepare for this big, big picture, this collapse of our currency, because I can't see any way we get out of this mess. And the only safety, I think, is abroad. We've got to move our money. And you can pick whether it's foreign bonds, foreign stocks, precious metals, how you want to do the portfolio. The most important thing is that you take action and that you get out of U.S. currency. And, you know, you can hope for the best. You can hope that cooler heads one day prevail, and maybe they will. But you know what? You better plan for the worst, because everything that Congress has done so far certainly shows that the worst-case scenario is the scenario. And until I see differently, I'm going to prepare for that worst-case scenario, which is an inflationary depression, hyperinflation, whatever you want to call it, it's coming. It's coming. And these politicians think that they understand the Great Depression. They are clueless. They think they know what caused it. They have no idea. They think they know what would have prevented it. They're wrong again. The actions that they're going to take are going to make it worse. If this crowd was in charge back in 1929, this country probably wouldn't even survive. You know, we probably would have been a Weimar Republic, Germany. They would have run it into the ground. They are completely clueless about what they're doing, and now they have the power to literally destroy the country. Just do what you can to protect your own wealth. That's all I can do. I mean, I'm out there doing on television, doing on the radio, screaming till I'm blue in the face, and I know it's not going to influence policy one bit. All I can hope for is to influence individuals who can think for themselves and who can take action now to protect their wealth. Anyway, give us a call at 800-727-7922, 800-727-7922. Get your accounts open, transfer them in, and get your money out of the dollar while you can. That's it. We'll be back again next week for another live episode of Wall Street Unspun.